Record. Hello, everyone. My guest today is Josh Teitelbaum. He's a senior engineering manager at Zendesk. Josh, thanks for coming to the show.
No, it's my pleasure. It's great to be here. I did a little research on the podcast and saw that you had a lot of great luminaries previously, and hopefully I can continue shining a light on things.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's why we invited you also, is because we definitely want some experienced senior professionals on the podcast. You have a extensive experience. You've been in the industry for quite a few years, like myself. Currently, you are a senior engineering manager at Zendesk. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about your role and maybe a little bit about the company too?
Yeah, well, if you don't know, Zendesk primarily is a customer support platform. We have a multitude of products and services that tie into customer experience and customer support. And personally, I work on the support product, which is the flagship product. And my current role as senior software engineering manager is to manage a few teams that basically focus on what we call internally the classic core platform for the US. There's a number of concerns on the internal platform, one of which is deploy CI/CD. Others are performance, reliability, and scalability. And there's an operational aspect of what we do. And we basically concentrate on upgrading and modernizing our systems. So I manage about four teams across three different time zones with those multiple concerns. And it's been I've been at Zendesk for 4 years. It's been quite a journey, and I've learned so much and helped so many people internally and externally through our customers. So it's definitely been a great journey.
Very interesting. Yet what's I've known of Zendesk for a long time now, spending a lot of years myself in enterprise software, but I didn't realize until I was preparing a bit for our conversation that they originally have also started in Denmark.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. There's a long line of, I guess, successful tech founders in Denmark, because I did some work with a former client of mine, Unity, and they also started in Denmark. And then recently I was listening about Basecamp, the collaboration app. The founder is also Danish. So, and then there's a couple of others I can't remember anymore now. But anyway, so it's very interesting. A lot of interesting tech stuff happening in Denmark. Awesome. So you have done, I guess, quite a bit of work in the software ecosystem, but I'm wondering, how did you get started? Like, what brought you to software, or in general, like technical field?
Yeah. Well, originally I started in the Department of Physics at San Francisco State University, and I worked at the Thin Film Lab under the guidance and leadership of Dr. Barbara Neuhauser. And originally I wanted to be a physicist, and my interest was in particle physics, but then as time went on and I was very young and impressionable, I was doing some work in the computer lab there, and there was like a bunch of sun systems, with a bunch of like VT100s. And I just ended up writing code, and I liked the tools more than the subject matter. So I really just took a liking to computers and software design. And the capabilities that the computers would facilitate. And then I just summarily ch changed my major, much to the chagrin of Dr. Barbara Neuhauser. And then, I had a number of wonderful mentors at San Francisco State University. The program there was absolutely amazing. It was just a wonderful experience coming out of that school and really getting steeped in matters that were very, very practical. I spent a lot of time in the computer lab there, learning the craft and being mentored by some really, really great mentors there.
And I'm interested, how did you apply software to specifically that physics lab? Were you writing some code for something related to the course of study that you were doing, or?
We were just using to the we were writing for the detectors basically gave us a data. We captured the data and we basically plotted the data. And then there was some analysis on the data to determine whether the chips that we were making were efficacious or not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit more specifically about maybe like some of the things that you have learned over your career in, from in technology, but then obviously now you're probably in senior leadership, so understanding a little bit also how to manage teams and people, and how does the two kind of, I guess, how do the two interests collide from a perspective of being an engineer, writing code, being kind of deep into figuring out, the functionality or whatever is required behind that, and then also kind of squaring away, making sure the team is successful, they're able to execute, perform, etc. How was your journey into these kind of two specific roles, really, at the end of the day?
Yeah, that's a great question. It wasn't easy. The role that I really started to get more into management was at a company called Careo. And they were it was actually Dockerbase that was acquired by Careo. And my job was to be extremely technical and understand what the individual contributors and team members were doing on a daily basis. And then, the role of management there was to ensure that we were working on the right things and ensure that the plans that we had drawn were, modestly correct and on time and effective and aligned with the product leadership. And that was that was my first journey into into leadership. And after that I went to a company called Lending Club. And Lending Club, I did more of the same. I came in as a very basically a senior engineer, and then I transitioned again to management, and it was a great experience because I got at Lending Club specifically, I got to mentor more people and grow their careers and show them basically the ways and means to be successful. And that was the most rewarding part of my experience as a software engineering manager. And what I learned along the way, there was a manager. It was a VP of engineering. His name was Edward Gonzalez, and he basically taught me one of the biggest lessons that I had to learn, which is to basically don't be too excited, don't be too low, and set the tone and moderate your tone. As an individual contributor, sometimes, you work on things, you get consumed by things, and you want to be successful. And when you're successful, sometimes you may do a chair dance, and sometimes, you may celebrate. And conversely, when things don't go right and you are facing some adversity, there could be a tendency for negative and knock-on effects from your portrayal of emotions. And the biggest lesson that I learned from Ed was I've got basically to stay in the middle, because a true leader will be able to take adversity as well as the good times and stay in the middle and still, carry the baton and be an effective leader. And that was really when I, truly, came into, one of the, the tenets that I needed to adhere to. And I've been practicing that, and it's been such a great journey. And that advice has stuck with me to this day.
Yeah, that's a very interesting advice. I think I definitely agree about having some kind of like a, I guess, even tone while you are managing a team. Probably some sort of calmness to it too. I'm wondering, obviously, as an engineer, or I'm sorry, as an engineering manager, you have to, as we know, manage people, and then at the same time, probably deal with other parts of the company. But how do you then keep your kind of technical skills sharp, or how do you kind of keep up with the latest trends also in technology on top of everything else?
Great question. I have to be completely frank with you. I don't have one job. I've got three, or possibly four. Okay. As a software engineering professional, that includes the umbrella of management, I have to be completely frank with you. I don't put my feet on my desk ever. I'm extremely steeped in what is going on and how it's going about. I do code reviews on the daily. I take up minor non-blocking tasks from the team, and I act as a facilitator. There's a couple of classes of tasks that teams do. There's the core coursework that, frankly, as an engineering manager, you probably should stay away from. And you should employ delegation to the teammates. And then there's the unblocking and facilitation. And that are ta those are tasks that are contributing to the team's success. And kind of, as I like to say, kind of the dirty work, that it's the repetition, it's the things that are rote, the things that the team could use an extra set of hands in order to do. I'll give you an example. Our systems, one of our systems at Zendesk, the support is written on Ruby on Rails. And a lot of the time, what I do is I clean up dead code and I chop a lot of dead wood. And that is classified under a facilitating activity. I do it because I not only want to make kind of like our environment, more pristine and more cogent and less complex, because deep deleting code is very, very good, but I also don't want, my core teammates who are working on much more important things, from a business perspective, to be, to be too steeped into that. And so I keep my attention on the code base in areas in which I can facilitate the team, and I stay away from, the main core coursework unless directed otherwise. And so that's basically how I stay current. The reason I do that and my particular management style is working that way is because I feel as if I can understand what the engineers are actually doing on a day-to-day basis, and I can empathize. And when I can empathize, I can repeat what they're doing, I can repeat their problems, and I can step into their shoes. And sometimes I've actually unblocked. I've come up with ways to facilitate ways around certain problems by having my hands directly on the code in order to get the exact perspective that they're facing on a day-to-day basis. Some managers don't do that. Some managers, have a different style. They're more steeped in planning and less in, the daily execution. But I find that my style, along with some of the other engineering managers who I'm very, very blessed to be with at Zendesk, they also take that first person perspective and work on facilitating actions like that.
Very interesting. So that's interesting. So I'm in similar, I guess, position as you, because well, slightly similar maybe, because I do have to wear a smaller team. So I do write a lot of code myself, and do other things, including doing a bit of code review. Well, doing code review and kind of deploying the code. I'm curious, like, what do you look for when you do your code review? I guess obviously I'm not sure how much code daily you might have to review, but it can, depending also on the seniority of the developers or how strong the team is, it can require quite a bit of effort sometimes if it's, some not as good code coming out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how I'm curious, what's your kind of strategy or process doing this?
Okay, well, I have to be frank with you. Their, past performance. I hate I want to use the adage, past performance does reflect future performance a lot of the times. Let's say you've got like a senior principal engineer, right? And there's a block of code, and this person has been at the company for like 8 years. Honestly, the trust and verification part isn't as necessary as someone with less experience and less seniority, in my experience. Look, we're all humans. We all are going to make mistakes. Make no mistake about it. No one is perfect. No code is absolutely flawless. There's always going to be bugs. There's always going to be challenges. But from the review perspective, I usually don't review the core functionality very, very particularly, because I entrust that to the actual engineer. As an engineering manager, one of the things that I personally focus on, or a few things that I personally focus on, is basically security and correctness. That's all. And so when I look at code, and I'll give you an example. Someone wants to add a method to a controller, okay? To a public interface on our public API. If a senior principal engineer were to proffer that PR to me, you know, the only thing, or even a junior one, the only thing I would look for is whether there is appropriate access controls on the public API, because I care about, you know, the company, and I care about, you know, access and security. And then I also check to make sure that there's a commensurate set of tests. And so as an engineering manager, those are the things that I am primarily focused on. I'm not focused on, you know, whether, you know, the controller, you know, sends, you know, the, you know, correct data in the correct format or not. Those are all in the specifications, and the engineer more than likely did you know, a very awesome and stand-up job on that. But what I usually focus on is security and future correctness with tests and stuff like that.
Okay, interesting. Are you kind of like touching on the code development subject? Like, what are maybe some effective ways into making your team more creative, productive, I guess overall better engineers? As far as like maybe training or specific leadership, is there anything you can share about that?
Yeah, I'm very, very interested in making sure that the team has the time and space to experiment. We are very, very big on spiking. If someone has an idea, let's say they want to use a new logger, or they want to implement a new job system, we usually give the engineers that want to start some of these campaigns that can take multiple quarters enough personal space in order to explore. And you know, I'm extremely privileged to be working at a company where my engineers are given that amount of leverage to experiment and bring the company forward. We have a lot of great engineers at Zendesk, but my core teams in particular are given a lot of space because they have proven that they use their spiking time extremely well, and they have brought the company forward on very, very large initiatives across multiple quarters. And, you know, that can only happen when the engineers are given the time and space that they need in order to experiment. And, you know, not every engineer is the same. Some, you know, are, you know, quiet engineers, and some are, you know, more vocal. And, you know, some need more space, and some, you know, need, some use the eraser, as I like to say. Like, okay, you know, the engineer will just, you know, during the experimentation time, will basically write something and, you know, spitball it, and then use the eraser if it's not, working. And then other engineers are the opposite. They will basically figure out the solution to the problem and not write any code until they have the full canonical solution, you know, either penned or you know, fairly well known. And the success that Zendesk has is because we have a full gamut of those engineers on those different spectrums, and we appropriately give them the time and space that they need in order to do the jobs that they need to do their preferential way to do it.
What do you think it actually, what does it make a great or excellent engineer? What are some of the common traits that you might have seen? Obviously, there's millions, or by some estimates, 26 million engineers worldwide, or software engineers, I should say. But what are the traits of the top 1%?
Wow, yeah, that's an easy one. It's curiosity.
Very
An
interesting.
engineer that is curious is the next thing that feeds into curiosity is fearlessness. I've seen the best engineers be curious about how systems work. And they have an undying hunger to figure out how things work. And then it's followed up with a fearlessness on changing things in order to make it better. And then they use their controlled systems of change in order to safely guide their current systems to the next level. And so Zendesk has very many large systems. I'll give an example. Like, our job system is absolutely huge. There's customers and clients and internal customers that use our internal job system. And we're currently in the process of switching it out. And we're talking about millions and millions of jobs being executed on a daily basis across 185,000 customers. And our engineers want to affect positive change on the system that is currently being heavily utilized. And it's the fearlessness of making big changes, but it's also the capacity to know what they're dealing with as well. They, you know, they it's not an it's they're not going in it with an ignorance of this. They're going in it with a curiosity, and then constructing a coherent and cogent plan to move us to the next system safely. So that the systems are uninterrupted and customers are not affected.
Very
So yeah,
interesting.
curiosity.
I agree. I think curiosity is absolutely, well, one of the primary things. But I'm wondering, do you have any effective ways when you're recruiting or hiring for your team or past teams to come across these types of engineers? How do you spot them, I guess, would be the short question.
That's an interesting question. How do you select for curiosity? Well, the best, yeah, that the one of the best ways to tune for that during an interview in the process is to ask very, very detailed questions about the various layers. Some of the best engineers, I mean, this also, unfortunately, this also comes with experience, right? Not every engineer will be able to tell you exactly what happens when you type in a URL into a browser. as just like, you know, the standard example of how to glean, you know, curiosity. You know, the question would be like, hey, what happens when you turn, you know, you type in a URL in the browser? I mean, the engineer that knows a lot and enough to be dangerous will probably, you know, talk about a plethora of things, and the conversation literally could never end. And the engineer that can do that and is steeped in all of that knowledge is more than likely the curious one, because they collect the knowledge, they thrive on the knowledge, and they're hungry for the knowledge of all the various systems and subsystems that are required in order to facilitate a certain task. And that's how you basically, in my mind, that's how you would basically select for the curious engineer, to see how much knowledge they have collected over the years.
Very interesting. So, do you see, well, I guess the big topic related to all of this is AI. Like, how do you see AI helping your current team, for example, or in general, software engineers?
Yeah,
Or
that's a
how
great
do you
question.
apply it?
I personally have explored with the ChatGPT, and I've asked it to write some code. It's actually quite good at it. I'll give you an example. I worked on a little, I was constructing an interview question. It was basically, hey, how do you implement Connect Four? It took me a little bit of time to actually come up with that answer. I'm very, very slow. It could be because of my age or not, I don't know. I asked ChatGPT, and I was very disappointed it came up with the answer in less than 30 seconds. So where is this going? I'll tell you this. Here's really where I think things are going, in terms of, you know, code generation and code facilitation. I think that if you've got ideas and there are existing APIs, I think a good prompt engineer will be able to construct a prompt to initiate spikes. And I think ChatGPT is extremely good at digesting existing APIs and existing information and formulating solutions that allow the prompt engineer or the software engineer to take that as a first step. Now, it's not production code, right? Because you can't, you the you know, at least from what I've seen, you can't give it the entire canonical set of ways and means that you've got at your company, right? You've got security concerns, you've got rate limiting concerns, you've got, you know, a lot of mechanical real world things that are just simply not known in the context of AI. But it does serve as a first step and a first implementation step of that journey. And so personally, I'm excited by that, but I'm not necessarily scared, because there are a lot of internal concerns that are just simply not covered by the AI models. And I feel like hey, if ChatGPT or whatever AI model can write some of that spiking code, and we can build on that as engineers, that's nothing to be feared. That's something to be embraced. And so personally, I welcome that, even though I was dismayed that ChatGPT solved Connect Four a lot faster than I could.
Yeah, I think like some very specific things it can do well, but as far as maybe writing like an enterprise system of some sort, it's probably still far out, due to some of the limitations you just mentioned and constraints. But one of the effective ways maybe that I've found in general, like these LLMs, is essentially being able to like sort of do a bit of debugging. That's where I find it useful. If I get some crazy error coming my way, I can, the fastest that now that I've been able to solve it is just generally using like tools like ChatGPT instead of in the past, obviously, like from GitHub to Stack Exchange, etc. But do you see, for example, I'm wondering, so I've spent a little bit of time, well, a good chunk of my career in the Salesforce ecosystem, and what they've done, and I did some Zendesk implementation, but I'm not as familiar with your product stack. But what they've done is they've been sort of moving in the direction of having this declarative programming. So instead of having the developers do code, now you have flows that are handling a lot of things. So there's this been progression that I've been observing over the last 10 plus years. So I'm wondering like if AI can sit on top of that now. So essentially build some declarative widgets that you can then now deploy directly into your instance and now have a new validation rule doing X amount of things, and even maybe the human can do the QA, but that's pretty much it.
Yes, I don't think, I'll have to be frank with you. From an engineering perspective, I don't think Zendesk is there yet. I think where Zendesk is really concentrating its AI play is in the customer experience role. And we're taking a very measured and careful approach, where customers, can interact with an augmented agent. And there's a whole wealth of information that we can give ChatGPT or any AI language model the context for. So if you're like a company that is selling a particular widgets, and we can feed the model all the previous questions that have ever come up about the widgets, hey, my widget doesn't turn on. The idea is that the model can facilitate the customer's agents in order to help our customers faster. And it's not a hands-off approach. We're taking a very slow and careful approach where we don't want the our customer experience agents to be we just want to make superior customer support agents. And that means, okay, leveraging these large language models in order to facilitate quicker answers. And so the agent then becomes a super agent with this other facilitating power behind it. And really, that's what's currently being worked on at Zendesk.
That's very interesting. So yeah, so I think as a Zendesk as a product, obviously have a perfect kind of use case. But you're actually, instead of agent or AI agent interfacing directly with the end user or the human, essentially the human is inter your agent is interfacing with internal AI and then interfacing, essentially being able to faster find probably like the in the knowledge base specific items that the customer is
Yes.
requesting. So it's
Yeah.
kind of super powering, as you said, that person's skills. Very interesting. So you're not going in the direction maybe yet of sort of having AI deflect like large majority of like cases or maybe simpler cases as part as kind of baked into your product.
Yes. Well, we definitely have some deflection. There are definitely some techniques of deflection that we start on the initiation of our customer experience. But we have to recognize that AI is not the end all be all, and there are still some unknowns and some questions that we have to be extremely careful about when we conscript large language model bots, if you will, into real world customer experiences. And so the augmentation, agent augmentation is currently, the way that Zendesk is approaching it to ensure that the customer experience is correct and non-deleterious, if you will.
Very interesting. So what are some of the advice that you would give to some of the, I guess, younger kids that are maybe entering the software engineering space, either out of high school or college, or that are basically new to the industry? Anything that you've learned through your experience that you would want to share?
Absolutely. It's stay curious. And never, you have to stay curious. And you have to be committed to your craft. We are a guild, whether we like it or not. It's a guild of software engineers, and our craft is building large scale, performant systems. And the only way you get good at that is by paying attention to the details and to be extremely curious. And I've had the pleasure of mentoring many engineers along the way, and I've seen many engineers become extremely successful. And the ones that were extremely successful were basically the ones that stayed very curious and worked extremely hard in order to gather and garner all the information that they needed in order to facilitate their teams. And if you care about your teams and you care about the people around you, and you want to do a good job, for your customers, you want to do a good job for your fellow engineers. I've always found that the right things will happen, and you will be extremely successful. And I've seen over the years that those who were more internally focused on themselves for their self-benefit really were not that successful, and they didn't have such rewarding careers. And so, as a member of a guild of software engineers, your job is to contribute to your industry, to contribute to your teams. And then what happens is that your experience and your skills grow, and then that by summary helps you in the end.
Great. Are you guys currently hiring?
I have to look at the job boards. Currently, Zendesk is hiring. I feel that there's a lot of positions open in Europe right now. We have some active positions open in Pune. I feel like there might be a few in Madison, Wisconsin as well. So I would encourage anyone listening to this podcast to go to jobs.zendesk.com, take a peek at the job board, and then see if there's anything that you like.
Awesome. Yeah, and we'll definitely share the links in the description. Well, Josh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for taking the time. And I'm looking forward to hopefully chatting with you again.
Absolutely. Thank you. The pleasure has been all mine. I really appreciate all that you do, and I love the podcast.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Bye.